Thank you, Jonathan. I am extremely pleased to be here with you today. Secularization, religious renewals, and modernity in Europe. The subtitle of this presentation could be From a Mode of Secularization to Another. But I refrain myself to mention it because it really sounds like a sort of marronnier, if I may say, a sort of sociological chestnut tree. In the French idiom of journalism, les marronniers, the chestnut trees, are these trite subjects which come back inevitably, as chestnuts do every autumn, in a recurrent way. Nobody can tell, indeed, how many conferences, books, research projects, and so forth had been devoted for 40 years to the secularization issue. In general, the conclusion is stop talking about secularization. The notion is inadequate, ethnocentric, ambiguous, and so forth. And after a while, then there is an announcement for a new international conference about secularization. The theme of secularization is a sort of conceptual phoenix. This is not very surprising if we realize what is at stake in these endless debates. Nothing less than the question of the future of religion in contemporary ultra-modern society. Loss or renewals, disappearance or reviviscence and spreading of religious concerns and interests in contemporary societies, of course, we already know that the response is both loss and renewals, both erasing and reconfigurations. But the very significance of this double and apparently contradictory movement remains to establish. In this presentation, I would like to try to document this movement in focusing on the European case, which had been considered and used for about one century as the paradigmatic example of the future, more exactly of the absence of future of religion in modernity, and which is now studied as the exceptional case in a woolly ocean of religious renewals. What about European secularization? To introduce a debate here about this question, let us start with a short comeback to the recent intellectual history of the notion itself. In French, the word secularization is originally a legal term. It refers to the transfer of church property to a secular owner, or the process by which a monk reverted to his secular condition. The word thus connotes an idea of emancipation from religious authority. It is in this meaning that it made its way into religious language, either to denote the weakening of the church's influence on society as a result of the modern day separation of institutions, or more essentially, to signify the loss of religious meaning in a society governed by scientific rationality. Secularization had given rise to a number of theological controversies that were rooted in this ambiguity. And shifting from the theological to the sociological domain, the notion remained just as equivocal. The Anglo-Saxon tradition has tied it, in a rather Weberian perspective, to the analysis of the rationalizing and individualistic tendencies characteristic of modern societies, stressing specifically the process of pluralization of the religious scene, when religion becomes a matter of different private choices. On the other hand, the French tradition, inspired by Durkheim and the French School of Sociology, placed more emphasis on the process of laicization by which the various social institutions won their autonomy and created their own ideologies, values, and guidelines. It's evident that these two approaches, the Anglo-Saxon and the French, are extremely revealing of the historical contexts which produced them. The first one clearly takes the Reformation as the founding event of religious modernity, an event that marked the end of the Roman Catholic Church's religious monopoly in the West and initiated the dual trend toward individualization of belief and pluralization of the religious scene. In the French context, the founding event is obviously the French Revolution, as the first, strictly speaking, political revolution stripped, to echo Engels' expression, of its religious garments. But a religious moment on one side, a political rupture on the other, but both these classical perspectives, each in their own way, referred to the idea of an eviction, either progressive or sudden, of religion by modernity. Religious decline could almost be said, using this rationale, to have been a prerequisite for modernization itself. In this regard, it's true that the major empirical studies on institutional religious practices in Europe, which have made up the core of research in the sociology of religion since the end of the 60s, have contributed striking evidence in support of these secularist certainties, mainly rooted in a positivist ideology of triumphant modernity, both as regards the objective aspect of this movement, that of the laicization of institutions, and its subjective aspect, meaning the manner in which it affects people's consciences and leads them to exempt themselves from religiously instituted code of meaning. The apparent self-evidence of these observations has thus encouraged certain theoretical simplifications and progressively established as dogma religious decline in modern society. In this perspective, of course, the American case raised a serious problem. But the difficulty was got round by calling upon the specific conditions of the beginnings of the Republic. The American cases could be considered as an exception which did not invalidate the general line of the problematics of secularization. In Europe, on the contrary, the religious decline was obvious and perfectly convincing. In the Scandinavian countries, Great Britain, the Netherlands, and France, the first signs of which can be said a real collapse in both practices and claimings for religious belonging appeared before the First World War. In Spain, the quake is a recent and extremely brutal one. It corresponds directly to the moment when the Iberian Peninsula, after years trapped in the ice of the Franco regime, joined the ranks of democratic European nations. The case of Italy is a bit more complicated. In Italy, which is, in a lot of respects, a highly modern country, the process seems delayed by the powerful social and cultural oversight, but less and less political and moral, still exercised by the Catholic Church and the very strong network of its institutions. But despite these regional differences, largely related to the history of each country, nothing seems to contradict either the general diagnosis of the link established between secularization and the historical process of political modernization. This widely shared observation has long served to neutralize the semantic uncertainties resultant in the sometimes uncontrolled importation of a legal and theological notion into the field of sociology. But uncertainty re-emerged quite conspicuously when the secular certitudes that provide the ideological underpinnings of the religious decline theory were themselves called into question. The turning point can be dated fairly precisely to the end of the 60s and the early 70s, which were marked by manifestations of spiritual and religious renewal all over the world, and even in the midst of the a-religious modernity that Western Europe is supposed to embody. As long as this phenomena has affected areas of social strata where modernity were delayed, or cultural regions subject to brutal policies of forced modernization, that could be interpreted without interfering with the classical presupposition of the inevitable secularization of truly modern society. But of course, when these manifestations occurred in the heart of the most modern societies of North America, but above all of Europe, it was no longer possible not to call into question the long-standing equivalence between religious decline and the degree of modernization of a given society. In one way or another, there had to be a way to manage the secularization paradox by which modernity, even in places where it seems the most triumphant, creates extremely favorable conditions for the expansion of beliefs and highly of new forms of religiosity. The first explanatory resort was the consideration of the fundamentally uncertain condition of modernity. And this, at the beginning of the 70s, because of a general economic and social context, it was probably the moment of a new awareness of this fragility of modernity. I can resume the argument as such. We live in societies in which there seems to be no limit to the human capacity for scientific knowledge and technological mastery. So we are constantly placed before new possibilities that continually disrupt the meanings we give to our experience in the world. We face this situation of uncertainty by producing new forms of beliefs in which we attempt to sketch out the meaning of this ever-changing world. According to this approach, which was made a new key for the interpretation of religious modernity, the greater the pressure of change, the more these beliefs proliferate, endlessly spreading and expanding. Contrary to what a previous conception of secularization has asserted, modern societies in which science, technology, and economics dominate are not only the societies in which manifestations of religious belief recede at the reign of a disenchanted instrumental rationality takes over in all domains. This, too, is an uncertain and dangerous world in which beliefs proliferate. A tendency strongly activated in the last 20 years with a growing collective awareness of the multiple economic, political, ecological, and social threats which undermine the foundation of Western democracies and the future of our planet. What could be done to face up these bloody blows dealt to the vision of secularization as a universal law of the modernization of societies? One solution was simply to sweep away the classical theories of the relationships between religion and modernity and conclude that the whole concept of secularization had never been something else than a huge optical illusion or a fiction with a purely ideological foundation. This way of starting at the other end of the problem had fed a flourishing literature at the beginning of the 80s, especially in the United States, where there was a widespread exploration, for example, of the supposed omnipresence of the sacred in modern societies, even in football matches and rock concerts. But, in fact, this approach was flawed by its inability to make sense in the same time of the strong evidence of the definitive disjunction between the world of belief and the organization of society in all democratic societies. The problem of these theories is always to hold in the same times two different directions of thought. Another approach, more interesting from a sociological point of view, emphasized the interruptions and reversals which have always been and still are liable to perturb the process of modern rationalization and to oppose the logic of disenchantment, which is the very core of the process of secularization. This approach itself came in two versions. The first laid stress on the crisis situations and effects of demodernization, and hence of desecularization, that they produce. This view, which makes religion a compensatory resource that helps in coping with the hiccups and disillusionments of progress, offers a lifeline in extremis to the classical view of secularization as a loss of religion, because it associates contemporary religious developments with a break supposedly reparable in the progression of modernity. But it was, on the reverse, unable to grasp the issues of the religious productions of modernity itself. It was powerless, for example, to take into account the spread during the 70s and 80s of spiritual currents and religious movements underpinning personal fulfillment, which were in perfect accord with the modern culture of the individual. For that reason, the need for making sense of the proliferation of the so-called new religious movements at the turn of the 70s brought out a second contrasting approach. These new versions linked these new upsurges of religiosity not to a failure of modernity as such, but rather to the advent of the rule of subjectivity that that characterizes a new step of modernity itself, generally designated as high modernity, like Giddens, or ultra modernity, like Marcuse, for example. The vision of religious modernity in this perspective, the vision of religious modernity itself was shifting with a specific relationship established between the disqualification of the great narratives pervaded by the great religious institution on one hand and the dissemination of small systems of meanings cobbled together by the individuals on the other. This new approach, focusing to the growing demands for personal authenticity in spiritual matters, gave priority to the analysis of the logics of the religious construction of the self, progressively taking for granted that religion in the so-called times of high or ultra-modernity tends to be coextensive to the nebula of small personal narratives that spiritual seekers make up and remake up at the infinitum. I share myself this special attention given to the process of individualization and subjectivization of beliefs that characterizes the whole spiritual scene in Western societies, including Europe. To describe this new field of religiosity, I use two figures of description that seems to be able to grasp the main features of this situation. The first figure is one of the pilgrim, the individual which walk and circulates and try from step to step to make up its own spiritual trajectory and to make up its own religious identity if he chooses to have one. And on the other side, the figure of the convert, the one who chooses his own religion and by this conversion express itself as an autonomous believing subject. But this approach, which was useful, and I consider that it remains very useful, well, it was rapidly very clear for me and for many other scholars that this new doxa had two main weaknesses. I just mentioned the first one, and probably we can come back to that point during the discussion. That is that the expansion of religious subjectivism and the deployment of informal forms of mutual validation of beliefs subject to a flexible system of free exchange of personal truth between individuals cohabits permanently in the same religious context with the parallel development of intensive forms of community validation of belief, which give precedence in contrast to the exclusive sharing of substantive and compact truths among pure regenerated converts, even in Western democratic countries. But I let this point: the polarization of the contemporary religious scene in all its local variants between what Emmanuel Sivan called soft religion and hard religion was indeed a central dimension which invited to go beyond the two exclusive approaches to the process of subjectivization and its consequences in terms of fluidity and mobility of individual quests of meaning. But a second weakness interests me more directly here. It was a tendency to replace a general and supposedly universal theory of religious loss in modern societies by a theory no less general and with equal pretensions to universal validity of a generalized fuseness of beliefs in a globalized universe. The empirical confirmation of the dissemination of individual sets of meaning in ultra-modern societies was sometimes made to serve a new, homogenizing reading of modernity under the vague heading of globalization. Following this direction, theoretical efforts to renew the classical analysis of secularization could easily reach a new dead end. But above all, they had to face, and it's the second part of my presentation, they had to face a new aporia, exactly symmetric of that which was the main failure of the classical paradigm when confronting the American exception. Nowadays, it is the European exception which has become an embarrassing exception which needs a special interpretation. What to do with the fact that Western Europe, in common perhaps with Canada and certainly with Quebec, can remain considered as the only cultural area in the world where the approach to secularization as loss of religion seems to remain to a certain extent relevant. Nowhere else than in Western Europe, indeed, has traditional forms of religion been eroded to such a point. Beyond the clues such as the catastrophic fall of recruitment of priests and pastors, or the weakening of the direct influence, political influence of churches that are not new. The decline in belief in a personal God is more interesting, and above all, the increasing cultural ignorance of religious traditions, of Christianity above all, and the autonomous expression of personal moral conscience with respect to the ethical prescriptions of the religious structures. All these indicators confirm the steadily deepening secularization in its traditional version of European societies in both its dimensions, objective, the institutions, and subjective, conscience and mentalities. France is, from that point of view, a sort of paradigmatic example. Let me give some figures to illustrate this point. In a country of 6 million inhabitants, half of them declaring themselves of Catholic origin, it remains about 7,500 Catholic priests, half of them over 55. 7,500. Nothing, it's really. The number of weekly churchgoers reach a maximum 4%. And among them, only 7% among the 4%, declare that they accept and follow ecclesiastical norms regarding, for example, contraception or abortion. The great majority of the regular churchgoers, great majority, 80% of the regular churchgoers, agree with the idea that Rome has nothing to say about their personal intimacy. On the other side, 40% of the French declare themselves atheists, the highest rate in Europe, with the exception of the Czech Republic. And for the first time this year, it's probably the most interesting figure, for the first time this year, more than 50% of the French declare that they never had any contact with any form of religious socialization during their life. These figures reveal an extreme level of religious disaffiliation among French Catholics and more generally among the French society. But with different and probably more mitigated forms, the same process is getting on everywhere in Europe, and it takes on its full significance within the religious history of politics, which stresses the concrete role that Christianity has played in the European domain as Marcel Gauchet says, a religion of the end of religion. Europeans are further removed than most from the figure of the regular churchgoer, receiving his religious identity from the community to which he has belonged since his birth and in which he accepts the prescription of observance laid down by the institution responsible for the transmission of the faith. And the disjunction between believing and belonging that my British colleague Grace Davy put as a specific descriptive feature of religious high modernity find its facts, its full relevance, nowhere better than in Europe. I could stop here, just stressing that Europe is not at all an exception, but rather a sort of extreme realization of the paradigm of religious individualization. And to a certain extent, it's true. Despite what I have just said, religion has not disappeared in Europe. It still persists as personal choice and as a mode of individual soft identification. Nothing exceptional in this picture, except the extreme intensity of the process of absorption of the symbolic resources of religion into the contemporary culture of the self, a process which is in Europe the culminating point of a long history of relegation of religion to the sphere of the private. However, things are, of course, less simple. And I would like to complexify this approach to Europe as an exception in a globally neo-religious world. Doing so, I am driven to stress, but in another way, the singularity of the European case. Because to describe the European religious situation, it is not enough to record only the objective indicators of loss, the decline in practices, the erosion of traditional beliefs, and to evaluate the extent of individual do-it-yourself constructions of meaning. For such a view can take us no further than the most visible layer, that of the relations explicitly cultivated by individuals with the so-called great religions. But to measure the presence of religion in European societies, we have to delve more deeply. We have to position ourselves at the level of the politico-cultural structures and the ethical and symbolic structures that form the frameworks for communal living in the society concerned, and which have been molded in depth by religious tradition, Christianity in particular, but also Judaism. We can then determine that even within the Christian realm, the construction of the modern issue of autonomy has followed different courses, visible, for instance, in the frontier that continues to divide Catholic Europe from Protestant Europe. This difference can best be illustrated by taking the case of France and Germany. The German approach to the question of autonomy of the subject, anterior to any problematization of political problematization of autonomy, was born of the experience of the Reformation. It is founded on the assertion of a religious individualism, which disputes the very foundations of authority in the church and frees the believer's relationship with God from all institutional mediation. The conception of the individual and the sovereignty that this entails is radically different from the fundamentally political construction that established itself in France through the dual and indivisible struggle against despotism on one hand and religion on the other that was crystallized in the revolutionary experience. For a more profound analysis of the differences in the civilizational workings of religion in Europe, we would have to distinguish other relevant differentiations within these Catholic and Protestant subgroups. Thus, within the broadly Protestant part of Europe, the English, German, Scandinavian perceptions of the Enlightenment, themselves rooted in different constructions of Protestantism, generated political cultures, conceptions of the relation between the state and the citizen, and notions of sovereignty and representation that are far from homogeneous. Now, every society in Europe today still bears the marks of the religious roots that are specific to it. In a country like France, where, as I told you a moment ago, where the historical work of laicization went particularly deep, and where the objective and subjective loss of religion can be particularly clearly illustrated, the phenomenon of Catholic encoding of culture, institutions, and mentalities remains extraordinarily significant and relevant to interpret a lot of questions in the French society. We are, Sartre in Being and Nothingness declared, we are all Catholics. This formula is noteworthy in its emphasis on the mirror that the French laïcité hold up to the figure of the Roman Church, whose direct hold over society and the individual it had labored to break. More broadly, the whole program of the major institutions in France, schools, hospitals, justice, the university, and state itself, was established and functioned for a long period by reference, rendered implicit, of course, to the Catholic model. It's impossible to make sense of the contents of public debate, of numerous questions which have, in principle, strictly nothing to do with religion, from the quality of food to ethical regulation of science, from the management of hierarchical relationship in business to the future of rural society, from the expectation that society has to the state to practices in social activism. It's impossible to deal with this question without gorging this Catholic impregnation of culture, which cohabits paradoxically with the very weak and practically inaudible official voice of the Church in these debates. This function of symbolic cultural encoding operates in different ways, though with equal force, in every country in Europe, from Scandinavia. For example, it's absolutely impossible to understand the shaping of état-providence, welfare state, in Scandinavian country without referring to the Lutheran encoding of culture. It's the same thing to Great Britain, from Germany to Belgium or the Netherlands, Italy or Ireland. In every country in Europe, the style of political life, the content of public debate on social and ethical problems, the definitions of the areas of responsibility of the state and the individual, conceptions of the citizenship and the family, visions of nature and the environment, but also practical rules of civil behavior, relationship to money, or modes of consumption, etc., have taken shape in historical religious contexts which continue up to a point to direct them today. This is, of course, not because the religious institutions have retained any effective capacity to impose norms. We know that they have lost this everywhere, but because the symbolic structure that they molded conserved a remarkable power of cultural impregnation that survives the loss of official beliefs and the collapse of observances. But this differentiated impregnation operates, we must never forget, within a common world shaped by the long history of dissociation between the sphere of politics and religion, one of the products of which is the specific style of a religiosity centered on the individual. The European model of religious modernity is positioned with all the differentiations that I have just mentioned in the context of the cultural and political program of a European modernity, which is no longer possible to take as the definitive model of modernity as such, but which keeps a powerful religious dimension. Last turn before stopping, as I said in the plains. The great question that faces us today is clearly that of the future of this civilizational matrix, historically molded over the long term. Several sets of factors contribute to the weakening of this cultural pedestal, at once unified and plural. In each case, the problems encountered reveal and accentuate the tension which is growing between the process of homogenization of the European religious scene by individualization on one hand, and the sometimes contradictory activation of the different religious cultures present in the same times in the same European area on the other hand. The first factor, which is also the most visible, is the cultural religious pluralization of Europe linked primarily to the phenomena of immigration, and especially the definitive settlement of the immigrant population within the host countries. The heart of this phenomenon of pluralization is obviously the strong presence of Islam in the different countries of Europe. This presence draws together those European countries that face the same problems of mutual acclimatization between widely disparate religious and cultural worlds. It also imposes a comprehensive reassessment of the relationship between religion and culture in the different societies involved. But at the same time, it reveals the diversity of the responses elicited in these societies to the demand of Islam for recognition within them. While it is true, for example, that the size of Muslim populations in Great Britain, France, or Germany mean that Islam can no longer be ignored in these three countries, it's also very clear that the road to integration of these populations differs considerably as a function partly of the political culture of each country and partly of the special character of each of the varieties of Islam concerned, Pakistani, North African, or Turkish, in the three cases in point. The different ways of dealing with a question such as the wearing of the veil in school, for example, is a good illustration of the fact that Islam has become a reality which simultaneously unites and divides the different European countries. The same dialectic of proximity and distance comes into play with regard to the phenomena of cultural globalization in which Europe is involved as much as all the rest of the planet. On the one hand, the spread of a homogenized media culture, the accelerated development of the circulation of goods, peoples, and ideas, the homogenization of modes of consumption, and the generalized subject of exchanges, including exchange of symbols to the mechanism of the free market, tend to erode the cultural idiosyncrasy, especially religious, of European societies. But on the other hand, the very dynamics of this cultural homogenization engender reactions which may favor the revival of these same cultural idiosyncrasies and bring back to the surface national, political, and symbolic issues relating to religious matters which might have been thought completely obsolete. While it may be imagined that the growing hegemony of a so-called North American culture and values may arose in opposition to the assertion of a European culture armed with its own references and values, we must also reflect that it tends to generate the formation of reactive identities which, even within Europe, nourish strengthened areas of competition which may be inseparably denominational and national. The fight to defend the cultural exception certainly finds nourishment in the soil that supports the religious world that cohabit in Europe, but these religious worlds, which are themselves differentiated, may bring to it elements of content that are together in plain contradiction. The phenomena of internal cultural pluralization on one hand and external cultural globalization on the other hand have the potential to contribute simultaneously to the erosion and the partial and paradoxical recreation of different religious civilization in Europe. It is this dual trend that permanently defines and redefines the singularity of a European religious modernity, and it is through this movement, in my view, that the place of European religious modernity is currently defined and redefined in the globalized constellation of what Shmuel Eisenstadt calls multiple modernity. Thank you very much.